Marriage is what brings us together today. What movie is that from?
I know we saw that coming. Is that Princess Bride?
Princess Bride. Have you ever seen Princess Bride?
Yes, it's hilarious.
It's a classic. Yeah. It's a classic. I showed that scene to my Cardinal Kung kids when I taught the sacrament. None of them have seen the movie.
I just saw
it for the first time in seminary this last year, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw it for the first time a couple of years ago, but it was so fun.
When did it come out?
80s, I think.
Yeah,
late 80s,
it's old.
Early 90s.
Yeah, I don't usually watch old movies like that, you know.
Old movies.
But it was
in color, you know.
Wow. It was in color,
it was,
yeah.
That's true. It was amazing.
The graphics were incredible.
It's just hilarious.
It was so hilarious. Mm-hmm. It wasn't serious about itself. But our topic of marriage is a serious topic. So welcome to Restless, by the way. I'm Father Joseph, and as you can probably tell, I'm here with Diane and Joe, as together we seek not to get married, because all of us are not currently dating or...
Well, I'm seeking to get married.
We're much seeking to get married, yeah.
We gave a free advertisement for her on one of the earlier episodes, so we'll just reiterate that. Diane can be reached at 203.
I'm happy to share my phone number if you're,
meet her,
you know,
Catholic young adult professional.
Young professional who has a good job, attractive, and solid Catholic.
That's right.
That's all I ask
for.
Send
pictures and resumes, too. That's
right. I'm joking, but I'm kind of serious.
Soon we're going to have all the single ladies wanting to be on Restless. Because if this works
well,
out,
if this no works
doubt,
out,
no doubt,
this,
first Restless marriage.
Yeah, no doubt, this is it. This is the trick. Get on Restless.
You know what? It's all about connections, so feel free to send them in.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we wanted to talk about marriage because, Diane has been attending this book study. Mm-hmm. So a few months ago, we were very blessed to have Christopher West on Restless, which was pretty exciting. Definitely probably the most famous person I've ever talked to in my life.
Really?
Yeah, I've never met anybody famous other than him. Hmm. Have you met somebody famous?
No, I don't, for some reason I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, no. Like, I've never met the Pope or like anybody else that's famous. Yeah.
You mean the Pope never met you?
He's been wanting to.
I mean, he does have a radio show.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, he might listen to our podcast, so.
I think he might be in our target age range. So.
I think he's 87.
Yeah, that's it.
But anyway, so we met Christopher West. And Christopher West wrote several great books about the theology of the body, one of which I've read, but he came out with an updated and expanded edition. It's called Good News About Sex and Marriage. And so Diane had a women's study on this book, and Joe snuck in somehow.
That sounds... I'm a seminarian assigned to the parish. I didn't sneak in. I was
oh, yeah. He was assigned to do
my
that.
My presence was never explained to the women there, but I was present at it.
Yeah, so basically we have a dinner before this little study, and I walked into the kitchen, and I was like, Joe.
Yes.
Hi. This is a women's study. What are you doing here?
I was made an honorary woman for the evening.
It's the 21st century. You can be made... He heard there was a good dinner, I suppose.
Dinner was good.
It was very good.
Good. Good. Columbus Park?
What?
No,
it was just chicken and salad, but it was delicious.
Father and I made dinner.
Oh, okay.
Which is a generous way to describe my involvement.
You chopped an onion or something?
No.
No.
Not even that.
He called the pizza place. But anyway, the men were also doing a study on this book, correct?
Yeah, they're all good now. They know everything. They're perfectly integrated now. They went through the course already.
Oh, good.
They're experts in the good news on sex and marriage.
From what I understand, the discussions were quite different between the women and the men.
I have no idea. I wasn't at the men's one.
Oh, you weren't?
No. I only got back to the parish on Saturday. But I assume that they're quite different.
I don't know.
Father has attested that they're quite different.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So what were some insights that you gained about sex and marriage from this book?
Yeah, so I mean, we've actually just started it, so we are not quite. We've really only gone through the first section, but the first section was kind of on, what is marriage, and then specifically in our last discussion, I think it was a great sort of topic. We went over sort of like divorce, right, annulments, and the question of should you attend this wedding, which I think is a very hot topic these days.
Sure. So what is your topic? You know, if somebody is marrying outside the church, should you attend that wedding?
I mean, basically what Father was saying was that, you know, marriage between like baptized Catholics is meant to inform, be in a church, right? So if you're not getting married in a church and you're getting married on a beach or wherever, the issue is that unless you have a dispensation or permission, right? Like that is not a valid marriage. And so, it is not a sacrament in the eyes of the church. So you're not actually, yes, you're civilly married, but you're not actually married in the eyes of God. And so to attend a wedding, there's you might not think that you're doing anything by attending the wedding, but there's this idea of scandal, right? Which is the perception that, okay, you know, for example, Father Joseph is this Catholic, or I'll use Joe as an example. He's a great Catholic guy, right? And he's attending his friend's wedding.
He says so.
He says so. But he's attending his friend's wedding on the beach, and his friend is a baptized Catholic and has chosen not to, you know, get permission to marry on the beach. And
in case my formation advisor is listening, this is a hypothetical.
Yeah, this is a hypothetical. But you know that. So an outsider, right, might look at Joe and say, well, Joe is a practicing Catholic and he's solid and he's here, so he's in support of this, right? So it's just you're leading people potentially to sin by what you're doing, and you may not intend it, but that's the perception, right? That this person is like saying that this is okay,
right?
And that I support it. And you know, no one on the outside, you may feel that, you know, no, I'm not supportive of this. I'm just supporting the person. But from the outside, unless you're wearing like a, you know, a sticker on your shirt that says like, I'm here, but I don't actually support them getting married outside the church. Like no one understands that, you know?
Right.
It's the same thing kind of like we talked about during one of our discussions of like, if you're, you know, obviously you should not live together before you're married, right? There's many reasons for that. I mean, chastity is the primary. But even if you are living as a brother and sister, no one else knows, you know, unless you have a sign painted on your house saying, we're living together, but we're living as brother and sister, as in we're not having premarital, you know, like we're not fornicating. No one knows that. So your friend might think that, oh, these are two solid Catholic people. They're living together, so it's okay. I can do that too. You know, like, do you see how that?
I totally agree with you. But here's the challenge with that, right? Mm-hmm. If you're living in Stamford, Connecticut, and it's $3,000 a month to get an apartment.
Yep.
And the two of you are living together, and you know the only other option is to split up and find another apartment.
Yeah.
What do you tell a couple that says, well, financially, we just simply can't afford that for the year until our wedding?
I mean, I don't know. I'm more of the stance of the hard truth of that you, like, there are less expensive places to live and you don't need to have the top, you know, like the newest whatever. I don't know. I've also heard, like, one of the Dominicans who I love, Father Gregory Pine, he did an episode, like, sort of on living together before marriage. And it's just like a higher calling of, like, you are called to, like, yeah, there are these so-called, quote, air quotes, practical reasons for living together, but like the higher calling is that you would sacrifice for the person, you know, and that you would, you're in marriage, you're called to make a sacrifice. So yeah, it would be a sacrifice to spend more money, but like ultimately that's what you're called to do in marriage too. So
yeah,
I understand though, like there are plenty of, I'm sure Father Joseph, you're aware, there are plenty of engaged couples who are living together, and I'm sure priests just, you know,
95%. Yeah. And I struggle with that because, you know, even though I do suggest that, you know, can you live separately? Can you have a separate bed at least, you know, in your house? You know, most of them, they give lip service at that moment, you know, when I'm in the meeting, they're like, because nobody wants to talk about it. I mean, some of them honestly don't even know that it's wrong.
Right.
Because they've never been taught that, you know, but you know, and when I do tell them, they're just—it's really awkward, and they feel really like I don't want to talk about this. So they'll say whatever they think I want to hear,
yeah,
and then they'll just go back and keep doing whatever they're doing, you know. So
yep, yeah, and it's hard to.
I'm not going to refuse them to get married because marriage takes care of that problem.
That's exactly what I've heard from other priests, that it essentially, like, you can't refuse someone the marriage because it does resolve that, but it's also like their right to get married. And I think that another thing just about living together, I know this topic is we're going off a little bit, but like you don't have, like, what that Dominican priest was saying too is that you don't actually, people think they need to try out their future spouse, right? Of like, let's live together so that we can make sure that we're compatible and all this stuff. But number one, the statistics show that like people who live together are much more likely to get divorced. So that doesn't work. Also, in the sense of like, we have to think of marriage as like, like there is a grace, like it's a sacrament if it's actually a sacrament, right? So like you have this supernatural grace to live marriage, because marriage in and of itself is it's almost like impossible to live without the grace.
Sure.
Because your marriage is essentially, I mean, it is a total gift of self to the other person, right? And that is just impossible to do without the grace of God. So you can't live with someone, right, as if you are married when you don't have the grace to do that. Because right. you don't have the grace. So you can't try it out. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
But also, too, I've always thought that, you know, that argument treats the person as if they were a car and you're test driving them.
Yep.
You know, and you can't use a person as if they were just an object that you're trying to test and see if they work.
Yep.
You know, that's
not true love.
Right. So absolutely. No, cohabitation, not good. Not good at all.
Not
please
good.
Please don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it gets super messy, too, if you break up.
Well, then there's that. Yeah. Absolutely. But so, all right. So, what other insights from this book about marriage? I mean, why is marriage a sacrament, and what does it do?
So I think an important thing to understand at the beginning is that in marriage, it's not the priest administering the sacrament or the deacon administering the sacrament. It's the priest or deacon's role is to receive the sacrament on behalf of the church and act as the church's witness. But really, the husband and wife are administering the sacrament to each other. Right. So,
yeah.
And the reason that works is that we're all baptized, and by virtue of that baptism, we are what are called baptized priests. So we have some priestly authority, even if we're not ordained priests like you, Father. And so that's why, Catholics have an obligation to get married in this context, right? Because it's a sacramental reality that they are administering. And it's also why non-Catholics who are baptized, this applies to them too. Their marriage would be sacramental, presuming that. Presuming that both parties are baptized.
All right, so two Protestants have a sacramental marriage.
Yeah, so a Protestant mm-hmm. and a non-baptized person, or a Catholic and non-baptized person, don't have a sacramental marriage. They have a valid marriage, but it wouldn't necessarily be sacramental, so it would not have that grace involved. I think that there's something really beautiful about the idea of marriage and sex being both, you know, when they're true, being a total self-gift to the other person. Without holding anything of yourself back, and then, like Diane said, then there's a lie that you're telling with your body, and we're not bifurcated so easily. Like we're not souls trapped in bodies where we can lie with our body, but it doesn't affect our soul. We're body soul composites. So the lies you tell with your body are actually they mean something. Christ is the truth, but He's also incarnate, right? And so these physical things matter. So if you are having sex before you're married, but you're kind of contracepting maybe, or even if you're married and contracepting, like you're holding yourself back. You're not making that full self gift. And ultimately, marriage is an image of the Trinity, because it is participating in the total self gift of the Father to the Son with the Holy Spirit. And then just as the love between the Father and the Son bears new life in the Holy Spirit, right? The love between a husband and wife also bears new life in the form of kids. And you're contracepting. You're literally contracepting all of that. You're cutting all of that off. Right.
Right. Marriage is fundamentally ordered first and foremost to children. And it's interesting how if you go back through the history of the church documents on matrimony, one of the earliest ones was Casti Canubi. I don't know if you heard of that. It was an encyclical in the 1920s, I believe. I think it was Pius IX. I could be totally wrong. Don't fact check me. But they make very clear, especially prior to the Second Vatican Council, they make very clear that the first end is children and the secondary end is the sanctification of spouses. And the reason why is because marriage is the only legitimate place where you can bear children. But you can sanctify another person in 1,000 different ways.
Yep.
So you don't have to be married to sanctify someone else. But there, you have to be married in order to raise children. So it's very ordered towards kids. And I've never understood the mentality of those who don't want to have kids. My brother has been married for, 12 years now, and no kids, and doesn't want to have kids, and has a dog instead. And I just think that's so meaningless. Like, what's the point? You're just basically living with a roommate that you kind of enjoy and have a lot of, you know, fun with for all these years. But when you're 70 years old, you're going to be so lonely.
Yeah.
No one's going to visit you in the nursing home.
And there are people who obviously this is a cross they carry, right, is infertility, and they are open to life, and God never gives them kids. Maybe they adopt or whatever. But, I mean, to choose that is sort of crazy. And again, I have no doubt that people in that situation love their partner, but they're not participating. They're not experiencing the fullness of love, because the fullness of love is total self-gift, which bears more love. That's what we said in either past or future episode, that celibacy is not sterile because it's an act of self-gift that bears fruit, that creates new love. It's just spiritual. Well, same thing with marriage.
Yeah.
So you're withholding that. You're withholding part of yourself from the other. Always.
I mean, if I got married, I'd love to have 12 kids. You know, I'd like to have a football team at least.
That's a lot of kids.
That's 12 kids.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, that's objectively a lot of kids. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's a lot. That's a handful.
I mean Catherine of Siena was one of 25.
Okay.
So.
Didn't most of them die?
I don't know.
I think at this point, they all died.
That's a great point.
Thank you. It's kind of insight that you need me for.
But I look around at big families that I know, and I have very close friends who are listeners who have 11 kids.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I look at that, and there's so much happiness. Yeah, I mean, they don't live in a mansion, but it's okay. Like, I mean, there's so much happiness. There's always someone to hang out with. I mean, I could not imagine their family or life without one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to realize, I mean, that there's really nothing that I think elevates the human person, maybe except for, like, you know, worshiping and celebrating sacraments. But there's nothing that elevates the human person that makes them more like God than to be able to do what God does and create new life.
That's sort of the tragedy of the fall, right, is that the original sin is Adam and Eve wanting to be like God. That's what the devil convinces them, right? That if you take the apple, you'll be like God. But what God is a loving relationship of persons, which produces a third, right? They already had that. I mean, they already were like God. They already had the ability to sure. generative love.
They had intellect and free will, a spiritual nature.
But specifically, they already had the ability to share in the creative love of God. So they already had the thing that they most desired. They just didn't realize it. And when they seized that, right, when they reached for the ability to be like God, now there's this confusion between the sexes, right? Now they're hiding themselves from each other, and Adam's blaming Eve, right? So it's just like, look at that story, right? So don't, I mean, for one thing, avoid the suspicion that comes from that, but recognize what you're doing is participating in the love of God, in the life of God, in marriage.
Right, right, because that was the very first commandment that God gave to Adam and Eve. And people forget there was a commandment before the fall. That commandment was be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. So it was a commandment, really, to live out your marriage vows.
That's another thing that this book, I think, really hammers home well, is that marriage isn't like an optional extra that was like grafted onto humanity by Jesus or something like that. Marriage exists before the flood. I mean, it exists back to the original garden. It's the first thing humanity does when there's two of it is get married. And it's not as if God like creates two people and then slaps them together. It's quite the opposite, right? He takes the woman out of the man, right? Because then ultimately they're destined to return to each other. Right, so like this is who we are. Like in the book, Christopher West says that, you know, it says that God created man and woman after His own image, not men after His own image, but man and woman after His own image. So we both speak to a reality of God in our masculinity and femininity. That's how we live. Again, we're not body soul. Our body and souls aren't split. They're together. So you are a man. You are a woman. And
but also speaks of the incompleteness of man and woman by themselves.
But that's the point. Marriage is the coming together of what belongs together. That's ultimately what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think to your point on just going back to the kids and everything in marriage, just in general, I mean, the end, you know, like marriage is obviously, it's beautiful, you know, but the end goal is not the marriage or finding the person. Like, marriage is a vocation, so it's a means to, sanctification. It's a means to, like, it's calling us to essentially a training in, like, loving as God loves, right? So, like, part of being open to children, right, and, like, having children is that you are, by having children, you know, like, you become, hopefully, less selfish, and you're focused on the other, right? So, like, you're making sacrifices for the other person, for your spouse, for your children. So it is like, it's a purification in and of itself. But I think, you know, society today, especially, it's like, we have so many of these things. I mean, it's just like contraception. People are trying to grasp and control and to be lords of their life of like, okay, this life is about me. Whereas marriage is really meant to train you, I think, if you live it well, that like my life isn't about me. It's actually about pouring myself out. But that in pouring myself out, I receive. It's like you're not losing yourself. You're finding yourself. Yeah. And you receive so much more. But people...
So let me ask you a question that I'm curious, and it comes up in my ministry all the time. How then do you balance the holiness and the happiness in a marriage? Like, in theory, right, holiness should lead to happiness, right? Mm-hmm. But in practical reality, like, it's, I think, a lot more vague and difficult to discern in some respects. Like, for example, as a priest, you know, I know that, like, I should be making these certain sacrifices in my life, right? But as a married man, should you be making the same kind of sacrifices and requiring your family to do it? Like, as a perfect example, I often preach about self-indulgence because I think that's the great American vice, is that we just love to indulge ourselves and it's all about us. But when you're married, like, should you take your kids on a super expensive vacation to Disneyland when perhaps a more less, which could lead to real happiness for your family, but you could also take a lot less expensive vacation and give more money to the poor. Mm-hmm. How do you discern that as a family?
I mean, I guess you just have to have conversations with your spouse, but I don't think
and with
that.
And with God.
Yeah, and with God, I don't know. I guess I'm of the stance that, like, you don't have to. I've seen parents. I think that there's, like, you know, just hearing stories at work, too. There's sort of this parental guilt that people, you know, feel, especially working parents, that because they're not necessarily attentive to their kids or, like, able to give them all the attention that they feel that they probably should, that they can make up for it in terms of, like, the material things that they give them. So, like, going on the best trips, having the latest devices and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's nice to spend time with your family, but I don't think that you need to, you know, like, I don't think you need to go on necessarily all these expensive trips. There's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of places to visit where you can just have quality family time and still have fun. I don't know. I don't think that there's a right or a wrong answer because, of course, you know, like, there are certain points, like, you know, for example, if it's your anniversary and you're married, like, yeah, you probably should go out to a nicer dinner, you know? Like, yeah, there are, you just, I don't think there's a, it's black or white.
That's the hard part. It's not always black or white, you know, because you could take your whole family to adoration one night, or you could watch a movie together. You know,
I mean, you could also, like, go to mass 15 times a day, or, you know, like, do these other things. There's always something better that you can be doing. So
yeah, but
is it better?
Well, I think what Diane said is right. It's not one size fits all thing. And this is why a prayer life is so important, because if you have a true relationship with Jesus, and he will convict you about these things when the time comes, you know. So it might be that at one point in your life, he's calling you to grow in charity toward others. It might be that another point in life, he's calling you to grow in charity towards your family. Mm. And so, like, you can only discern that if you actually have a relationship with him. But if you're kind of, like, wandering around asking, what should I do, but ignoring the person to whom you could actually ask the question, you're not going to get anywhere. So, like, I don't know how comfortable I would ever feel about saying to somebody as an outsider, yeah, I think that you should use that money for that vacation for this other reason. Because I think that, you know, again, baptized priest, right? Like, as the mother and father of a family, you should be discerning, trying to discern, like, okay, you know, there's all these competing values. They're all good, right? Charity towards others, quality time with our kids, quantity time with our kids, all these things. How do we balance them? And ultimately, God, I mean, the Holy Spirit will give you the wisdom to do that as long as you ask for it. That's what I would say is all I would ever feel comfortable saying, I think, is ask the Holy Spirit for the wisdom to balance these things.
I think you use a great word, discernment, because a lot of people think that once you've found your vocation, you can stop discerning. But as a married person, you're discerning all the time. Where do I send my kids to school? Where do I live? What job do I have? Where do I go on vacation? You know, these things are things to discern constantly.
And it's just the beginning. Spouse. I mean, that's why you have to, I mean, I joke about being single, but it's like a serious, you want to be with the right person. You want to be with someone who, like, especially as, you know, like, if our end goal is really heaven, like, you want to be with, hopefully, a solid Catholic, someone who is, and I'm not saying that that's, you know, for people who married outside, whatever, but, like, for myself, I want to be with someone who is on the same page about all of these things, morally, who has a prayer life, who is going to pray with me and, like, be willing to, you know, because it is a constant discernment, and you need to be on the same page about how am I going to raise my kids, especially in this crazy society where, you know.
Well, that's another great question you bring up, is that, you know, and I get asked this all the all the time when teens or young adults want to start dating somebody that they fall in love with that may not be Catholic or may not be on the same spiritual page. And they say, well, you know, hopefully he'll convert or, you know, this or that. I mean, because I have seen, I mean, we've all seen families that have converted, you know, through the example of a spouse.
Yeah.
So is it a good idea to date somebody that may not be on the same spiritual page yet?
I mean, again, I think you have to discern, like, is this what God is actually calling me to do? I'm not going to give a yes or a no, but I think, you know, like, the church has stipulations, too, in terms of, like, disparity of cults. Like, we recognize that it is more difficult to raise kids when you're not on the same page and you're not of the same faith. And for me, I just, like, I don't even want, like, I want to be on the same wavelength of faith.
Yeah.
Because I think that,
St.
like,
Paul says, do not yoke yourself with unbelievers.
Yeah, and you really have to think about, like, am I, you know, I really love this person, love being around them, but, like, long term, you know, the honeymoon phase wears off, and you're with this person for the rest of your life, right? Because marriage is for the rest of your life until death do us part. So, you know, like, you have to really think ahead in terms of, am I going to have constant arguments with this person about how I want to raise, like, what are sort of their long-term goals in terms of raising kids? Like, what are their perceptions on this issue? If this is, you know, kind of a deal breaker or super important to me, how are they going to respond to that? Because if you're not on the same page, you're going to have just, you're creating a nightmare situation. You know, God can work through anything, but why are you making your life and your circumstances harder than they have to be? And especially when it comes to raising kids, I mean,
yeah, that it amazes me when I think about the youth group that I'm running in Monroe. I look around at most of these kids; their dads don't come to church. It's almost always the father, and it's such. And I can think of very few families where both mom and dad are on the same spiritual page. It's usually one or the other that's leading the charge, and it's a great cross.
Yeah,
for the kids too.
Yeah,
confusing.
Yeah, and I would rather be single for the rest of my life than with the wrong person or someone who is not going to be a great father and example to my children. You know, like, there are other things there, and that's a heavy cross for me to have to bear. You know,
sure,
but it's like,
sure.
it's I think it's so critical to a child's upbringing, for both parents to be on the same page, for the father to be just as involved in the formation, the spiritual formation. This father, you know, has a just a special role there and influence. So,
I think that's an important piece of the, when we talk about the ends of marriage. You know, procreation is only half the story. It's procreation and education mm-hmm. of your children.
Yeah,
and the most primary education is the education in the faith, because it's their, you know.
I mean,
soul.
Ultimately, you want to, like, the most important thing is not where your kid goes to college. It's not how successful they are in the world. It's you want to do everything that you can to give them the tools to, like, pursue God and to get to heaven, to become a saint.
Right.
Because if you don't, like, that should be the primary and ultimate goal, right? All the other stuff is kind of superfluous. Like, you just... It is what it is. But, like, if you have failed, this is how I look at it. Like, if I have failed in that respect, and granted, you can't control what your kids ultimately do, but you can certainly do everything in your power, you know, as they're growing up to make sure that you've given them, you know, that you've shown them the path.
Yeah.
And I do not, I take that so seriously that I would rather you wait for the right person to walk that path, to run that race with you than to be fighting against the person your entire life. So for me, it's like, you really, you know, connection and chemistry is important, but it's much more important to find someone who is virtuous, who is pursuing virtue, who is pursuing holiness, because ultimately, like, that person is, you know, God willing, going to be the father of your children or the mother of your children. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think you have to, like, look at it from an eternal perspective and not from, like, a temporal of, oh my gosh, he's so adorable and, you know, we have so much in common. It's like, that's great, but marriage is a vocation. It's a calling. It's like a means to get to heaven.
Amen.
So, and it doesn't have to be miserable. I'm not saying it has to be miserable, but you have to have
that
the
ugly
higher
one
goal.
Who's a good Catholic. No.
Yeah. You have to have the higher ends in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Any thoughts, Joe?
Not typically.
That's fine. You don't have to. We can wrap up.
Yeah, there's one thing I would say is that obviously it's like the ideal situation is two devout Catholics, but I think there's the reality is that, like, is it the end of the world if your husband is a devout Orthodox and you're a devout Catholic? Like, that's pretty close. Like, I think that you should, as long as someone's open to conversion, open to what you're to the truths as we see them, I think that's important. I think it'd be hard to be married as a serious Catholic to be married to an atheist who didn't believe in any of it and wasn't open to it at all. But you know, I think that life is messy sometimes, and don't make perfect the enemy of the good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But that's what you discern.
Right. Hopefully. All this is just, you got to discern it.
Bring it back to prayer.
And I think there are people that perhaps are open to faith versus people that are actually opposed to faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have someone that's open, definitely, even if they're not a believer themselves. Well, thank you for joining us in this episode of Restless, where we talked about some of the great insights about this great gift of marriage. So if you are married, consider the highness of your calling, the beautiful dignity of living out that image of the Trinity, that way in which we give ourselves with total self-gift, and the calling to procreate and have educate children for the kingdom. If you're not married and perhaps discerning it, be discerning about who you're going to date, so that you date for that purpose of the holiness of marriage, so that you and your spouse can get to heaven. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Restless. You can find us on 1350 AM, Veritas Catholic Network, and 103.9 FM. Tune in next time.
Hey everybody, this is producer Matt. If you liked this week's episode of Restless and want to help the show grow, please rate us, review us, and subscribe on your preferred platform. God bless.